Get the Angel Reese special at McDonald's now. Let's break it down. My favorite barbecue sauce, American cheese, crispy bacon, pickles, onions, and a sesame seed bun, of course. And don't forget the fries and a drink. Sound good?
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating restaurants for a limited time.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
You got mail.
Hi, I'm Elise Morales.
Hi, I'm Millie Tamaras.
And this is
Go Touch Grass,
the podcast where we log in
so you can log off.
Millie and I are two chronically online comedians, and on this pod, we break down the week in internet discourse, viral memes, TikTok trends, and niche influencer drama so that you can go do literally anything else.
And if you like what you hear today and want to hear more, we got a Go Touch Grass Patreon with tons more content weekly, access to our Discord community, and our spinoff series, Search History, where we go back and break down a viral discourse from the past.
Our latest Patreon episode was a installment of our series, What the Musk, where we talk about what Elon Musk is up to, which at the time was about his latest baby mama drama, the 13th. But since the release of that episode, it has been announced that he has had yet another child
14th.
With Siobhan Zillis. It's their third child. It's his 14th. Never in my life has a Patreon episode gone out of date with the swiftness that this one did. Though the information is still good and still correct. Yeah. Just know that he has had another child.
Another child, but not a new baby mama. It was the same one. And I will say, if you're in the Discord today, I put this really, really good TikTok where this woman, who's like this PhD literary analysis person, compared Macbeth to Elon Musk and the story of hubris and how all the things, and she says he's in his fourth act.
Wow.
Shit is going to start to crumble very
soon. Shit is going to start to crumble.
Because they get so arrogant, they don't switch it up. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review. We love your reviews. We need more of them. But really, the best review you can do is to tell your friends about us. Say, look, there are two really stylish, really cute Hispanic women with ADHD with a podcast.
Yes.
And all they do is...
We're bringing cozy style today. It's cold here in New York.
Yeah, we're bringing layered turtlenecks.
Layered turtleneck is happening.
You know what I mean?
And speaking of what we're wearing, as you all know, 2025 is the year of Go Touch Grass on YouTube. So if you want to see the fits, if you want to see how cozy we came into the studio today, you can do that every week on Saturday. Our full YouTube episodes drop. They have some little extra moments. Millie puts in all of the visuals that you need. It's a great place. We're really trying to build out the YouTube this year. So definitely get on over there and get subscribed.
I'll say I was editing the latest episode in a hotel lobby. And this guy came over and he's like, "Do you make content?" And I was like,
Do I?
And then he's like, "I also make content." And I'm like, but I forget that I was in the suburbs and is like, yeah, not everyone's a content creator here. He tried to mansplain editing to me.
No.
And he didn't even know the editing software I was using. He's never even heard of it. I had to write it down.
No.
And that was but guess what?
Bold.
Guess what? He subscribed to our YouTube.
Oh, hi.
So if you're listening, Kwame, we love you.
We love you. And it's actually great what you did. And you're our best friend.
Yes.
And have fun with Descript, the editing software that we use.
Descript, please give us in-kind sponsorship.
All right. We have one last bit of housekeeping. We heard from so many of you about how you want to attend our Tea Party Brunch event, but you needed a little bit more time to get the tickets together, get the looks together, get planning. So we have bumped the event to May 3rd. It is still a brunch at 11 a.m. at Prince Tea House in the East Village. All the other details are the same. Once you hear this, all of that information will be updated on our Patreon, so you'll be able to still go there and get tickets. And if you already bought tickets, if you're hearing this, you already have an email in your inbox explaining all of this. Your tickets immediately roll over.
Hi, Elise here. Just popping in to say that if you bought tickets already, what you'll actually have from me is a message on PayPal. I thought that PayPal would just give me your email addresses so that I could email you all, but I guess that's not how PayPal works. So maybe PayPal sent you an email that says you have a message. I don't know. I've never messaged anyone on PayPal before. We're all learning together. Either way, go to your PayPal. You'll have a message from me. And if you can't make the new date, I will immediately refund your tickets. Okay, back to the episode.
So we just wanted to give you guys more time so that you could come join us because we got so much wonderful response. Yeah. So we're really excited now to see you on May 3rd. And speaking of people who we couldn't wait to see.
Yeah.
And who's been waiting so patiently.
And we didn't bump him back. We bumped him up, baby.
We bumped him up. Listen, we've got a really good friend in the studio, you guys. He is a writer and comedian and the host of the new show Abolish Everything, streaming right now on Nebula. It's Chandler Dean.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, we're so excited to have you.
I'm excited to be here and to be the huge come down after the Sam Sanders episode. All right, in case anybody's expectations got too high for the caliber of guests, we're bringing it back down.
Listen, you're the star of Nebula.
It's true.
You're the star of Nebula.
What is Nebula?
It's intergalactic and I'm a star.
Yes.
Yes.
So tell us about Abolish Everything. What's the show? How did it come about? Where can people watch? Why is Millie not on it?
I'd be thrilled to explain. Well, Millie declined to be on the show many years ago as we were just adjudicating. Abolish Everything is a show where comedians give 5-minute monologues about the things they want to see abolished from society. And then a panel of improvisers grills them with questions, tries to maintain the status quo. They're called the political establishment. I've been doing it for a few years in New York. We did it at Under St. Mark's for a year. And then we decided we wanted people to come to the show.
Yeah.
So we went to Caveat for a year and a half or so after that. We're still at Caveat. That's where we're taping it. But Nebula has brought in, you know, some great production design. They've spruced up the play.
My jaw was on the damn floor when I walked into Caveat. For anyone listening, Caveat is like a very well-known, nice, venue here. It's already very nice, but I walked in for this taping because, spoiler alert, I am on the first episode and I abolished speakerphones. But anyway, I walked in and I was like, this Nebula's got some money.
But also, like, the stage was really nice, too.
Yeah, they, like, set-dressed the whole thing specifically for your show. It was so cool. The taping was run so well. The vibes were so high. Energy great. Everyone was so funny. It was just, like, it was a great experience.
And what did that come from? Like, did you do debate in high school or something? Or?
I work as a speechwriter, so I have a lot of experience, like, writing arguments in writing form. Mm. I also just, like, I've done, like, humor and satire for a bunch of different sites and things. So I love that kind of comedy that can be read off of a sheet of paper.
Yeah.
And I also like riffing, but I'm bad at acting. So that makes me, I guess, okay at improv.
Mm-hmm.
But the stuff we do on the other side of it with the political establishment is exactly what I basically wanted to create the show I would want to be booked on.
Mm.
And both sides of that are the things that excite me the most. And that kind of tone, like passionate tone that comes from having to abolish something.
Mm.
I'm very tired, quite frankly, of like, I don't give a shit style comedy where people just like sort of are like, well, you know, this is a half idea and I don't care about it. I'm like, why would you expect the audience to care if you don't care?
Yeah.
So I think it's a sort of format that forces everybody to be giving like 110%, like really passionate in one direction or the other. And I like to think that translates and makes it more fun.
Yeah.
Because I love the getting kind of irrationally angry about something small.
Yes. I mean, that's Elise.
That is me.
Half of this podcast is me being like, Elise, it's okay.
Yes.
And that is what I love. And I feel like online specifically, like Twitter and stuff.
You've been doing you've been really good with our vow.
My vow is to not engage. I don't get in any more conflict
online. Internet fights.
I don't get in any internet
fights.
She's
been doing good.
Yeah.
And I have been doing good because I feel like what often gets me in trouble online is if I put on like a hyperbolic pretending to be mad about something thing where it's like, I'm not actually that mad about this thing. The internet always takes you dead fucking
100%,
serious. And they're like, wow, you really believe this? I always think about, I think, and I may have brought this up on the podcast before, but there's an ancient episode of the You Made It Weird podcast. Like, I listened to it in, like, college, where they talked about that, like, comedically, it's funnier to say fuck vanilla ice cream than it is to say I just don't care for vanilla ice cream.
Of course.
But if you tweet fuck vanilla ice cream, people will be like, wow.
Yes.
There are actually industries that rely on producing vanilla. And you're saying that all of the people
my
who
grandfather.
Work in this industry.
Yes. Yeah,
you're saying my grandfather should be dead.
Yeah. Well, and it's that kind of like, why did you write this tweet to hurt me personally? Like,
yeah.
You have infringed upon my right to never have my beliefs challenged or never have anybody have a different experience from me. So now I'm going to yell at you.
Yeah. So, yeah, you did something really good. And like, you took that very fun energy that people have online.
Yes.
And turned it into this live show that's already fun. And then like, or some people like don't translate a lot of live comedy to watch later.
Yeah.
But that show is absolutely so good to watch.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Like filmed and like it really does have the essence of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you feel like you're there when you're watching.
There is something, yeah, like where we are kind of bottling up that like, because there is kind of an intense, fun energy when you are fighting online and like crushing,
yes.
You know, when you're ratioing someone and everybody's on your side, like
yes.
It does feel pretty good, even though it's inherently evil what's happening.
Yeah.
So I like to think like the political establishment kind of is like a satirical version of like, did you not think of my great grandmother before
yeah,
you
exactly.
tweeted that?
Exactly.
And then we put it back online and guess what? People will have, I'm sure, real online fights about
yeah.
the subject matter.
Oh, absolutely.
And the circle of life continues.
And yeah. God bless. But anyway, so if you are listening to this, you can watch it on Nebula right now. I believe they have like week-long free trials for Nebula
yes.
too.
And also a heavily discounted annual membership. If you go to nebula.tv/abolish,
well,
you can get 40% off.
There's the
wow. link. And it's a good deal because like, you know, you guys are getting paying creators and like, I don't know. It's just like a good use of your money.
Thank
yeah.
you. I don't want to dwell on it, but I do really like it's something I'm aspiring toward with the show because I feel like, as we know, because we are all trying to create our own little mini empires of comedy in the absence of gatekeepers offering anything to anyone anymore.
Yeah, yep. That is so real.
There used to be like a middle class of comedy of like above average and funny or die and
yes.
things like this. People could make like a decent living without being famous doing comedy.
Yeah.
yeah.
And I want to, like, if my highest aspiration for the show is that, like, we can keep growing it and keep building it and, like, the funny, deserving people in the comedy / alt comedy space in New York, like, it's a SAG-AFTRA show. It's a lot
yep.
of people's first SAG-AFTRA credit that we've booked so far. And I just really want the chance to, like, find hilarious people that I've known for so long that haven't broken through and give them a chance to, you know, it's not the same as like a proper late night credit, but that stepping stone in between has been missing for so long.
Yeah.
So
and I
right.
want to be that.
There used to be,
yeah,
there used to be some,
except not for me.
The tension,
not for me, not
the
me.
Tension is building and stay tuned.
not me. I don't get a stepping stone.
Millie, and I know for a fact that Millie is more than capable of canceling me online with a single post. So, yeah.
No, no, I will
the dance will continue.
Yeah. I won't cancel you to get on.
Okay. I have one more question for you before we get into the meat of our episode, because Chandler, in addition to the many clips of Abolish Anything that people can find online, some of which have gone
viral,
gone far, you have gone viral for something very specific.
Oh, boy.
Which is that you and your beautiful wife.
Yes.
Beautiful wife.
Got married at the Manhattan courthouse on the day that Trump also went to the courthouse to be arraigned. Can you please give us the brief rundown of that story? There are many news articles about you.
Yes.
As a result of this.
Well, of course, we really wanted our best friend to be there that
yeah,
day.
see, this is why we don't have straight white guys on our pod. You get them on once and they're similar.
And they're like,
exactly.
I have
Trump.
Met Trump and yeah. he was at my wedding.
Indeed, yes. yeah.
Jesus Christ.
No, what actually occurred is that we picked the day, you know, far in advance, rather arbitrarily. We were having our proper ceremony in Houston. And later that April, we were getting legally married in New York. So we just picked random day, April 4th, in the middle of the afternoon to go. And then maybe 3 days before is when they scheduled the arraignment for Trump. The first one, the first of many.
Yeah,
And it was literally going to be, I want to say, like an hour or like 45 minutes, like after we were there.
Mm-hmm.
So like all the hubbub and stuff was going to be beginning all day. And so I posted first, like, just me next to the two dates with the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme playing, being like, uh-oh. And then that popped off a little bit. And then from there, when we went to the actual, our ceremony, like, there were obviously, like, hordes and hordes of people there, like, protesting.
Yeah.
To which I was like, well, we could tell our grandchildren that they were very upset about our interracial marriage. Yeah. but in truth, of course, it was like everybody protesting Trump. But the other thing was that, you know, they pump people in and out. Like every 15 minutes, there's like a wedding ceremony at that courthouse.
Yeah.
So like 40 different couples were getting married that day.
Yeah.
And so it became a bigger story than just ours, because there were all kinds of reporters interviewing everyone who was getting married and seeing how they were feeling and all of that. And there was a real feeling of like unity and excitement, just about like being like, well, fuck this guy. We're going on with our lives.
Yeah.
We're not going to let this like affect any of our plans.
Mm.
And like also a celebratory, you know, which of course, you know, was optimistic at the time, but a celebratory feeling of like, this guy, this is a bad day for this man.
Yeah.
And we get to have a great day on his bad day, you know?
And now there's all the bad days.
And now
we get plenty of bad days forever going forward. But for one day, it was
He's paid it forward for sure, for sure.
But it was great. And I was really, and the beautiful thing about it is like, now that day for us is like extremely well documented. Like, we were interviewed by a bunch of different places. And the most surreal part of it was like, mostly they were just asking for like, the story of what happened and, you know, for me to relay it. But at one point someone was asking me like, and what's your take on the arraignment? And I was like, I don't know if I have a prepared statement on Donald Trump's crimes, like ready to go. And so I found myself going from like casual recapping voice to being like, I am pleased to see that the former president is being held accountable for his crimes.
Yeah.
And I hope he is brought to justice shortly.
Yeah.
And he was
in some ways, yes, and in many more accurate ways, he was not.
No,
but honestly, though, think about it. Would you rather go to jail or hang out with Elon Musk every day? And
it's
I feel like that's probably worse.
That's
really
hard.
He could have gotten some peace and quiet by about now. Yes,
you know that there's no way he enjoys Elon Musk's company.
He is famously a germaphobe. Elon Musk, little boogery kid. Anyway, I heard that there's this footage of Elon Musk's kid wiping his nose, wiping it on the desk. Trump is a germaphobe.
Yes.
I heard he got the desk replaced.
Oh my God.
Like,
I buy that.
Like,
I think that for so many reasons, he probably can't stand hanging out with him because, again, Trump, like, most powerful person in the world. It's horrible, whatever. But he does live in a hell of his own making.
Yes.
And when he was happy, he got to hang out with cool people.
Yeah.
Who are like cool, sexy, fun people.
Yeah.
And Elon Musk is none of those things. And I'm sure the whole time Elon Musk is talking, he's just like, the slurs that are going through his mind as he's talking about Elon Musk, we're obviously not going to repeat them here, but it's a cacophony of slurs.
Well, and it's like, this man is a gentleman from Queens, big Andrew Lloyd Webber fan. Like, you know, I think honestly, what he wanted more than anything else was to like get a standing ovation at the Oscars. Like, he loves celebrities. He loves glamour. Like, he is like a catty queen at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But he just like, you know, he couldn't get accepted in that world, thought he could just sort of by brute force and like power get people to like him, which is like evidenced by the fact that he's taken over the fucking Kennedy Center.
I know.
And it's like, okay, you make yourself chairman of the Kennedy Center, but it's going to be like white trash people that you hate, that Donald Trump would never want to be associated
and,
with. Those are the
people that he would dress up like them for Halloween as a joke.
Yes,
type thing.
Green Acres.
Okay, but you just brought up the Oscars, which is a perfect segue into our first segment. This is a software update. This is our segment where we update on some viral discourse we've talked about in the past. We are recording today the day after the Oscars. They were last night. We previously covered the Carla Sofia Gascon tweet.
Yes, of course.
In their entirety. We then did an update where Millie
Speaking
and I...
Speaking of a cacophony of slurs.
Oh, my God, yes.
Title of ep, a cacophony of slurs. Put a pin in it, maybe.
Just like a bunch of redacted words, pinche, in the middle, and then,
Well, it's so funny. Like, again, we don't have many straight white guys, but if we had a cacophony of slurs with Chandler Dean
as our... promoting his show.
Abolish everything. I mean, it could be interpreted wrong.
It could do well on the YouTube.
You'll pick up a whole new following.
It could really pop us off on the YouTube. But anyway, so we had speculated at the end of that episode, is Carla Sofia Gascon going to go? Will she be there, etc.? She was there.
Wow.
Yes. Netflix did pay for her to go and for her glam. There was a brief period of time where Netflix had cut her off, basically, on the press tour. And they were like, we're not paying for you to, like, go anywhere and do anything. They had cut her out. But they did ultimately pay for her to go to the ceremony. She was nominated for Best Actress. Conan made one joke about her that was funny. It was like, Anora has 497 F-bombs. That's three more than the record set by Carla Sofia Gascon's publicist. Great.
Yes.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
But otherwise, I felt like she kept a very low profile.
Totally.
For someone who was nominated in the Best Actress category, she was kept a very low profile. Even though Emilia Perez was nominated for the most awards of the night, they only took home two. Zoe Saldana got Best Supporting Actress, and then they won Best Song for El Mal, which did lead to a very awkward moment where the French people who wrote the song were like trying to get people to sing along.
Sing along to the song you just voted for that, like, you love so much.
No one knows the song in that way. But I guess to round out all of the Emilia Perez discussion, which, full disclosure to you, Chandler, Millie and I watched it, and our takeaway was like, it's not the worst movie we'd ever seen, but it certainly wasn't the best movie I've
ever seen. But it was not the worst, and I would say it's okay.
Yeah.
And sometimes, in some scenes, I would say it was good.
I thought the El Mal scene was actually good.
Yes. Well, I can speak to, I watched it at New York Film Fest with my wife, Carolina, and she told me afterward, like, we were both, like, gripped and entertained.
She's Mexican-American.
Yeah. And she, we were both, like, watching, and I think we were both gripped and entertained the whole time. And she told me afterwards, her thought process was, like, you know, I don't know that I really identify with this story or that, like, this experience aligns with me, but whoever this queer Mexican filmmaker is, they surely, you know, are telling their authentic story. And as soon as a big-ass French name appeared under directed by, she's like, I hate this movie.
Yeah.
It's not for me. Yeah.
So here's my question. Do we think the Carla Sofia Gascon tweets affected Emilia Perez's Oscar outcomes? Like, could he have gotten a Best Director? Maybe some of the cinematography, I thought, could have potentially won. Because there was some cool cinematography in it.
Oh, really cool. They made great lighting choices, great whatever. I would say that I think it definitely just, like, for the scandal to happen right when voting was happening.
Yes.
Was that, and I think, you know, I heard in other podcasts, well, first you have to understand that, like, the Oscars are, like, the Super Bowl for, like, nerdy theater people and theater kids, which is us/we. So people were speculating that, like, people who vote for the Oscars kind of pride themselves in, like, not letting them get swept in internet controversy and, like, cancellations. But, like, because Carla said something about the Oscars themselves, they didn't like that.
An ugly gala, she said.
Yeah.
So I feel like that fucked it up. And also, like, they don't
I
like...
I can excuse racism, but I draw the line at making fun of the Oscars.
Well, yeah. And literally, I was just thinking about, like, how the movie Tar was so good.
Yes.
So groundbreaking. But, like, that's not what speaks to these fucking people. They like, they don't want to see... And even with May, December, it's like movies that, like, any kind of space that kind of, like, makes fun of these people who are, like, so up their own ass, like, they're not down with it.
Yes, but they do love, like, a La La Land where they're portrayed as, like, living in the most magical world and et cetera.
And, like, where Anora, where it's, like, look at, like, the beautiful chaos of New York City.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think that also the clearest evidence that it definitely tanked it is that I'm Still Here won Best International.
That's what I thought, too, is I think Emilia Perez would have definitely gotten Best International feature if that hadn't happened. And I feel like it's not even just the Carla Sofia Gascon tweets. I feel like it made people in general also aware of the criticisms of the movie on a larger level. So
they're like, everything about this movie's fucked.
Yeah, well, it just tainted the whole thing. But I do feel like Oscars voters were like, well, we're not going to punish Zoe Saldana for this.
Well, it's helpful that she's like Afro-Latina. Like, 100%. They didn't want to. And also, like, I'm sure Netflix was like, well, it is going to look bad if we don't invite our only, like, you know, trans actress when, like, frankly speaking, like, people like Mel Gibson and all these,
100%.
Like,
fucked up people go to the Oscars all the time.
All the time, so.
One, I think that was part of why it collapsed was because they had put so much chips on the history-making element of Carlos Sofia Gascon's performance. Like, when they did the, when they accepted Best Picture, Musical, or Comedy at Golden Globes, they put her front and center.
Oh, yeah.
And they were, like, pushing her as, like, the face of the movie, in part to address the criticism of, like, this isn't a queer, like, this isn't queer filmmakers telling a story. This is not Mexican filmmakers telling a story. And so they were like, don't worry, we have someone who checks off some of the boxes, although not all of them because she's Spanish.
Yeah.
But they were like, look, like, at least we can be happy about the history making of this performance. And then she turned out to have some incredibly racist and horrible things to say. So that undercut that specific narrative, you know.
And, like, speaking of history, like, Spanish Inquisition level racism.
Yes.
Literally saying we need to expel Muslims from Spain.
Like, wow.
Boo, like, get new material.
Like a level of ancient racism that shocking to see. Okay, well, I agree with you guys. We've solved it.
We did it.
And congratulations to Zoe Saldana.
Congratulations, even though that's causing stroke.
Yeah, even though she's already kind of said something dumb. We're moving on.
We can't even.
She was like, the movie's actually not about Mexico. Anyway,
now you tell us.
Yeah, we can't.
Let's get into the discourse.
Yes,
I don't
please.
Have a good segue. Today's discourse is from an element of the internet that we've definitely discussed before, both here and on the Patreon. We are talking about family vloggers again today. A hot button topic. Quick round robin. What's everyone's opinion about family vloggers?
So I remember watching Shay Carl and his family. He was like a Mormon guy.
There's a lot of Mormons doing that.
It's more kids, more content, I think, is the idea.
Yeah.
He was like one of the first YouTubers to do like, I'm filming a vlog every single day, which was like, you know, it was just such easy candy to eat. And then, of course, there was an infidelity scandal
and then it
all like fell apart.
Wow.
So I guess I would say like that made me inherently suspicious of family
vloggers
because I think they project this like impossible vision and then also probably are under constant stress because they can't actually do anything fun without turning it into content and the children can't consent.
Yeah.
Like almost like turning your wedding day into content.
Oh, excuse me. That was foisted upon me. Forces beyond my control. I was emailing Millie at the time. Please do abolish everything.
You were not. Okay. Yeah, I was. Was gonna say, not for me. I couldn't engage. There are other forms of harmful, unethical content that I do consume. I mean, I love a good fight video.
Yeah, of course.
Family vlogs don't do it for me.
Yes.
But then especially like, I you know, listen to the multiple podcasts about Sherry Frankie, Ruby Frankie, like the Mormon Frankly vlog. Like, it's a fucked up ecosystem and it's something that I don't even really enjoy that much.
Yeah, I'm kind of along the same lines. I'm not a hardliner of like no one should ever show a photo of their child online type vibe. But I think when the majority of your content is your kids, and again, it starts to take over every aspect of your life where like a family trip to Disneyland is also basically a working trip because you're doing content because you've partnered with Disney to do I don't love.
Would you put AJ and Big Justice in a different category? Because they're not vloggers, but they are doing like family content.
That's We Bring the Boom. We Bring the Boom.
I feel like
the Rizzler's friends.
I feel like they're almost like, is AJ in school? Like, is he like, is he putting away money for the trust?
Which
is getting to what
we're
getting
talking about.
Child actor type concerns.
I think it's a little better because I do feel that the AJ and Big Justice, which for anyone listening, those are the Costco guys. They rate Costco things on a level of booms. We've played their accursed music on the podcast before. Yes. Much to Millie's sadness, deep, deep sadness. I did make us listen to We Bring the Boom.
We bring the boom. That's what we do. We bring the boom. We bring the boom to you.
I do feel like at least what's better about them is it's the videos are very specific, and like it's not just every single aspect of this child's life is being filmed every single day. It's just going to Costco and doing these booms.
Yes, yes.
And then his other various media appearances that he now makes. So I think it's slightly better, but I do also have concerns.
I would say it's like this. It's like a monkey who is constantly followed all around. And like every shit, every banana it eats, everything is documented for millions of people and everyone's dissecting, versus a monkey that goes to like Times Square and does a little dance for a quarter.
Yes. Yes.
It's like on a day-to-day level, like, I mean, abstractly, they're both being exploited, but the monkey has like some days off.
He gets some 100%. Rest. The other monkey presumably gets to rest when he's done doing his little dance. Okay, great. So there's been just like a lot of anti-family vlogger media out lately. Millie, you mentioned the rise and fall of Ruby Frankie, which was a wondering podcast. There's The Devil in the Family, The Fall of Ruby Frankie is on Hulu right now. Max has an update on Our Family, which is a documentary about those family vloggers that like
adopted
a kid and then gave him back. Like, it's like, basically, I think they used the language of like, we've rehomed him, is like really bad.
They adopted an autistic kid from China and then like documented it and then gave him back. But like, honestly, the documentary was really nuanced and good of like showing the complications, but also like, don't fucking use your family for content.
Yeah, exactly. And also Sherry Frankie, who's one of Ruby Frankie's kids, her book, The House of My Mother, also came out. Ruby Frankie being the family vlogger who was in charge of 8 passengers who was found to have been like severely abusing her kids. You can go listen to any of the media that I just listened to get that full and horrifying story.
Yeah.
So the reason we're talking about this today is because all of this has also corresponded to rumors starting to spread online about an increasing number of family vloggers who are moving out of California and to pretty much mainly Tennessee. Over the past year, several high-profile family influencers have either relocated from California to Tennessee or announced plans to do so. This includes the LeBrant family, who have 12.8 million YouTube subscribers. We're getting there.
We're getting
YouTube
there.
Subscribe.
We had 202 today.
Yeah, we're getting there. You'll be seeing us.
Yeah, you'll be seeing us.
You'll be seeing us. And we're adults.
Yeah. Exploit away, baby.
The TikToker Cecily Bachman, who has 2.2 million followers. Brittany Xavier has 5.1 million followers on TikTok. Is Cecily Bachman known to you?
Cecily Bachman is Pajamagate.
Wow. Oh my God, guys, we've covered this woman.
The pajamas, the Christian pajama scam.
On our Patreon, she was selling exorbitantly expensive Christian pajamas.
Oh my God.
That were like completely flammable and like Chinese, factory slop that was like see-through, but she was selling like $150 like
pajamas that you were supposed to buy one for every single member of your family,
of course.
It was like matching pajamas.
For like Christmas morning.
Right.
Okay, so we're going to watch a quick video. This is of the LeBrant family. So they're, as far as family vloggers goes, again, 12.1 million YouTube subscribers. They're huge. We're going to watch just like a quick clip of their announcement as to their move to Tennessee.
Do I fit? Wow, look at us. We're in the spot again.
We're here.
If you guys watched the vlog portion of this video, then you rock. If you just fast forwarded to this part of the video, then
you also rock.
You still rock. But yeah. This is the fun part of the video. We have Everly here with us because she is
very excited to tell you guys. So we're going to let her do the honors.
Okay, so before we tell you guys where we're moving to, I just want to give a quick little preface as to why We are leaving California. We are leaving California. There's your first hint. And there's a bunch of reasons. Savannah and I, the family, we've talked about the possibility of leaving California for a long time now. This isn't like a spur of the moment thing. This isn't a recent thing. This has been a long thing since we've been married and growing our family. And obviously, you know, California is expensive. And there's a lot of reasons that weigh into this. A big one is my whole family living in Florida. 2 years ago, was it? We went and looked at houses in Florida very seriously.
We were considering Florida for a while.
I don't think that we really filmed that or talked about it or anything, but we went, we had a realtor, we looked at homes, and we were this close to buying a house in Florida 2 years ago.
And we all, like, I think we were all pretty set on, like, okay, we're going to move to Florida. And then all of a sudden, we just, like, felt like it just wasn't right.
We really thought, like, okay, we're going to do this. And then when we went there and looked at houses, it just didn't feel right for all of us. It was just like, which is strange because, you know, even myself, having all my family there, just was like, no, I want to stay in California. Like, it just feels right to stay. But the conversation of leaving California never went away. So we're always like, we still kind of almost have this desire, like, to get either closer that way or, you know, it's just almost this desire that we felt God put in our heart for a reason that we just couldn't get rid of. And it's something that even Everly, we would talk with her about a lot, and there's excitement there. And obviously, just having four kids now and them all being relatively young, it's like, if we are ever going to leave California, let's do it while they're still young, before everybody gets, like, into teenage years and we really sink our roots deep. You know? So it's either let's move now-ish or let's stay here forever-ish. You know?
Okay. So, initial impressions of this family, this beautiful blonde family.
Oh my God, the daughter. I can't look at her face. She's like upset. She was like crying, like trying not to cry multiple times. And like, it's hard to watch. These people are weird.
Yeah, I think it's like having her dead center in the video, like as they make this announcement, just staring into the camera as they share this news. It's like, I guess they're trying to sort of implicitly say, like, this is a decision we're all really thrilled about. And meanwhile, of course, her life is getting, you know, upended in the moment.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting that they present, they put her dead center, present her as the person delivering this news, and then they talk to the end. She does eventually talk about how she's excited for, like, her new dance studio and stuff.
Yeah.
I can't get a read exactly on how she feels other than, like, a general discomfort, but maybe that's me projecting onto this child.
Yeah.
But either way, they give their reasons, and there are a couple little things in there that I think are interesting to note. One is, like, God put it in our heart move from California. And another is, like, a brief reference to, like, California's expensive. So they are going to Nashville. They're going to go to Tennessee, as many of these influencers actually are. So the reason I wanted to watch this, and the reason why this is kind of emblematic of a bigger thing, is that this sudden spate of moves from family vloggers who are now going from California pretty much universally to Tennessee is causing all this discourse, because people are speculating that a lot of these moves are actually being prompted by legislation that Gavin Newsom signed in 2024 with the help of Demi Lovato. Shout out.
Well.
Shout out to Poot. Specifically, he signed two bills designed to ensure children and teenagers who perform in online content are protected from financial abuse.
So, oh, wow.
One is Assembly Bill 1880, which that expands Coogan's Law, which is the law that already exists to protect child actors and make sure that, like, parents put money away from them, and was named after a kid who basically, like, worked his entire childhood and then found out his parents, like, didn't save any of his money. And it's sad. This now, it's now kind of been expanded to include child content creators. This amendment provides children influencers with the same financial protection as other forms of traditional artistic employment. And marketers and those hiring child influencers directly will need to implement policies to verify the existence of a Coogan Trust account and prepare to pay 15% of earnings directly into those accounts. So that's an important point to remember, because that's, like, it's not just something the families have to do now. It's like, now if you want to work with kids, there's kind of an extra step for the brands as well.
Wow.
Then there's Senate Bill 764, or the Child Content Creator Rights Act, which establishes additional legal and financial protections for minors featured in monetized online content. The newly enacted legislation requires content creators that feature minors in at least 30% of their content, even if the minors are not contracted to do so, to deposit 65% of the minor's gross earnings in a trust account that they can access when they reach adulthood. The bill also requires the parent or legal guardian to prove the existence of the trust account, including by maintaining certain written records and to maintain records of the content itself to provide to the minor upon request. So with the passing of this law, California becomes the third state in the country to protect influencer kids. The other two are Illinois and Minnesota. The law went into effect on January 1st, 2025. So people are noticing.
Wow.
Interesting to see some of these families are now moving from California to a state that Tennessee probably not as likely
not.
To enact this kind of legislation protecting kid influencers.
Yeah. I'm like, it's something I've really not considered a whole lot before, like the idea that, of course, like the children in these families are such major contributors to the value of the product. And I've always just thought of it like, you know, I'm just like icked out by the fact that they are involved at all. But yes, of course, like there should be compensation. And what's interesting is that you say like that one of those figures is like 65% of the child's like compensation goes into a trust. But it's like, how can you ensure that they're getting compensated at all to begin with? And also, what's the threshold at which, like, you know, these people would raise a red flag? It's obviously somewhere below 12 million subscribers. Like, it's clear they would qualify.
And I think, like, we've been talking about this for a long time. I think that, like, the internet has been unregulated for a long time, and there weren't people in power that could wrap their heads around like what's going on. But I feel like this is a trend of what we're going to see, where it's like all these kids that grew up in front of a camera on YouTube are growing up, are getting older, like Sherry Frankie.
Yeah.
And she's writing a book and she's like, it was terrible. Like my first time. And I think it's like interesting of like the content should be retrieved at the person's request. It's like the first time she got her period was on a fucking like
vlog.
On a vlog, and like everything's so humiliating, whatever. It's just really interesting too, because this happened a lot with the Duggar family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of like, you know, this is reality TV, which is also something that's going to be probably more heavily regulated too.
Yeah. But I think they would probably still fall under Coogan's law at least if they were kids on a reality TV
show. I don't
know. Because it's a production that's actually contracted, they would have like actual production SAG contracts and stuff.
So like what happened with the Duggars is like one of the women, like once they decide to like separate from the family system, the dad had like got all the contracts and stuff. So it's like they had no money and they had to start from scratch and all this stuff. So it's like,
wow,
it's interesting that they're doing it. So like an account directly goes into. Because, yeah, like, what happened with Sherry Frankie was she had to have a bunch of roommates and all this shit from, like, her mom that was making millions of dollars a year. And, like, who knows what this girl, like, this girl, her whole shit is online forever. Like, she shouldn't need to, like, have a roommate and work at a Chipotle because whatever. You know what I mean? And, like, that's what these parents are running away from. It's, like, they're living good. They're doing, but, like, would these people have content without their kids?
Yeah, well, because it does say specifically that it's for pages that where the kid is in more than 30% of the content. So it's not saying if you're just a regular influencer who mostly does your own stuff and every once in a while there's a video where you're like, this is my kid, that person then has to make a trust and stuff. It's like if there is a significant portion of your content that is related to these children, and it can be reasonably assumed that that's part of the reason your page is popular. Yeah, you got to pay them.
Yeah,
you got to pay these.
And
kids.
At that scale, it's just like they have to be making such an exorbitant, extraordinary amount of money.
12 like, million followers on YouTube. You are making money.
Yeah, there's no question. And so, like this idea of like even saying something like, like that California is expensive really did like, you know, send my radar off of like what tax haven are they trying to avoid even before you describe this law? And it's like, it's just so cruel to be like, yeah, like we can't afford to siphon off this small percentage of, again, the enormous value they have. But it's also like, even they may intend to, you know, give her some portion of money down the road, but it's about maintaining the power and maintaining the leverage of like deciding exactly when and how they do it. And, you know, just taking away from any notion that, you know, that she is a participant in this, as evidenced by the fact that they just talk while she sits there silently staring into the camera.
We're going to let her tell you. And then they just talk for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. And it's like, they could have done the video without her.
Yeah, exactly. They don't even need it. And she's got a sweet little face.
But I really do think, yeah, you're right. Like, just sort of preemptively putting her in there to, you know, avoid that criticism and, you know, avoid, because they know that if they did it, you know, without her, that they probably would get some backlash and comments of like, okay, but what about your kids, right? So,
yeah. So, okay. The number of influencers that have done this, as this discourse has come on, people start coming in their comments, basically being like, are you doing this to try to get away from these laws? There are no influencers, no family vloggers have said that.
We're doing
that. None of them have said that. And I will say that these influencers, this family, the LeBrant family, they do say that they have a trust account put away for all the kids with money from the blogs. That is what they say. But most of the influencers either don't fully address it or they address it like this. So we're going to watch now. This is a TikTok from Brittany Xavier, who has 5.1 million followers on TikTok and runs her own kind of like mommy account.
A wild week on TikTok. We started planning our move last summer, and I talk about it more in a podcast episode. The original plan was to move in June 2025, once Jaden graduates high school in May. But they found mold in our rental house that we were in at the end of January, and so we had to move sooner. With the LA fires, rental inventory was already low, and there was none in Pasadena that worked for our family. Moving twice in 3 months didn't make sense, so we moved up our timeline to Tennessee sooner. When we first started looking at where we wanted to move, we originally thought about Texas, and we decided it was too hot for us and that we wanted four seasons. We ultimately decided on Tennessee because we wanted land. We want a slower pace of life. We have friends here, and it's a really good sense of community. We have an amazing climate for farming, which is what we ultimately want to do. Growing our own food and having our kids in nature as much as possible. I've been a full-time content creator since 2015. My income doesn't depend on if my kids are in my videos or not, but we've always made sure to set them up financially regardless. I even have a YouTube video on my channel from 2021 where I talked about how Jaden gets paid anytime she's in my content. It's called How My Gen Z Daughter Makes and Manages Her Money.
How My Gen Z Daughter Makes and Manages Her Money.
Don't get mad at me. Don't get mad at me.
Don't get mad at me. And guys, this is a video that's like to camera and she's kind of like doing makeup in this one. Her child is not in this video. Yeah. I will say that.
And I will say, like, as someone who's, our job kind of is to watch these videos and whatever, I've seen so many makeup tutorial, like, get ready with me, as I say. She's doing her makeup really well. She's using good quality products.
Where it's due.
She's not using a lot of makeup. Because sometimes I'm like, girl, what are you doing?
Yeah. Sometimes they like really just like do pumps of foundation directly onto the skin.
No, it's too much.
No, she's applying nicely.
That people are ever just putting on the makeup, like, because they're not, it's not a makeup tutorial. It's just happening to put on makeup while talking about something unrelated. Is it like theater where it's like, and then the makeup is not actually used sometimes because there's like those fake podcasts?
Well, it's like, I would say that it goes down to a big part of like the female girl friendship experience,
right?
Is getting ready together and talking to your friends,
yes,
while you're doing your makeup and whatever. So like these series of videos are like, she is as if you're her friend and you're right, sitting on your bed, on her bed, listening to her talk,
yeah,
but you're in her, like, it's that kind of thing that is trying to mimic.
Totally.
So sometimes though, people already have a full beat of makeup on and they're like, get ready with me, and you're like, girl. And I'm watching because I watch because I do makeup a lot and all this stuff, and I'm like, you're not even like, they're just putting highlighter or like, whatever.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's like they'll wash it off at the end.
Right.
They're not even using it. But this one, I feel like she's gonna walk out. It's not too much. She's really doing her makeup.
Yes.
She's a good content creator, I would say. Yeah. But the content is terrible.
But what's being said is that. Awful. So I did take a screenshot of some of the comments, just like the first couple of comments on this. First comment. The wellness to white supremacy pipeline is real. Because there was a bunch of like trad stuff in there. We want land. All of that. And is any of that inherently bad? No. But in the world of family vloggers, which does skew conservative, which does skew Christian, there is something where you're like, oh, are we getting into homesteader stuff? Yeah. Are we getting into raw milk?
It's a real like pipeline. Yeah. When she said that, she said Jaden. And then she said, that shook me. and it's not even like the most crazy, like, you know.
I feel like I've known female Jadens.
Jadens?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
If it's a Y, maybe. I don't know any female Jadens.
Yeah.
It's like, do they belong in California?
That's Jaden. True. It's like, why are you bringing this female Jaden all the way to Tennessee? We're not sending them.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, the other family, their kids, again, are named like, Everly,
But that's how white people name their kids now.
It's true.
Everything they made fun of black people for, white people are doing it.
Yes.
Their names
colonizers,
are crazy.
Colonizers.
They're doing it and doing it worse.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Shaniqua or Kaylee? Kaylila?
Yeah, Kaylee with a K-E-I-G-H. No.
I know how to spell Shaniqua.
And it's phonetic, I would say. Okay, and here's another comment that I liked that has 14,300 likes. Found mold equals California implemented child labor laws that require minors to have a trust fund with 65% of their earned income. There is something, obviously, like finding mold in your house is real. Like, that's a real thing that can happen.
I mean, but all have mold. We're living in New York City.
But I do feel like there is a conservative influencer wellness, right-wing wellness-y obsession with the idea of finding mold as well. And that, like,
there's, like, institutional rot, like, that it's impacting you.
I feel like I hear about finding mold a lot more from them.
Yeah.
There's just, it's just a lot of interesting little things.
It's tied right into the like, well, and it's safer here or there, right? Like, just like,
well, yeah, if you have land, the only people killing your kids is you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're just gonna accidentally shoot your kids.
There's plenty of guns available at our bedside. Yeah.
So the conversation has really picked up steam on TikTok, where people like kind of breaking down this stuff and pushing this theory are racking up a ton of views. Again, like I said, there's no influencer currently who has said, yes, this is why we're moving. But a lot of them are parroting these kind of conservative talking points. So this woman, Brittany Xavier, she also at one point responds to a comment saying specifically that she wanted to move to a red state because California's leadership is a mess at the moment. Mm. They need help. Hoping here has competent leadership. We shall see. So, I mean, obviously, California has gone through a tremendous amount right now. Like, I'm not saying there's no validity to being like California is really expensive and the government is not doing an amazing job over there. But there does seem to be like a red state talking point element 100%. To this.
I mean, that's what people say. There was a really interesting study, like, or not study, I would say case study of like this Mexican family who's this Mexican-American family whose entire content was about being conservative. And then they moved. Sadly, the reality is like those red states are cheaper.
Yeah.
So it's like they see all these things about California sucking and all this stuff. They made this big family vlog move about how they're all going to go to Idaho. They went to Idaho. They got a big, nice house. And they're so excited to be conservatives. Guess what? They were so racist to them. This Mexican family, they very ceremoniously moved back to California.
Wow.
And like in a probably shittier, more expensive situation than what they left. But these people have to like, okay, girl, like do your thing. There's a reason why shit's expensive and shit is cheap.
Yeah. It's also, I guess I just push back on the idea that Tennessee has a way better government. Like look at where their schools rank and how social services fall there. Let's look at how infrastructure is maintained there. Again, California's problems are big and flashy and in the news right yeah. now and like zeitgeisty.
Yeah.
But Tennessee is not like running like a well-oiled machine.
Well, and it's just incredibly suspicious for that to be the one specific state that you randomly chose to move to again after your house has mold, when there's like Nevada's cheaper than California, Arizona's cheaper than California, Oregon is cheaper than California.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of other places, but clearly there is a political, yeah, reason for it. And also her just preemptively being like, and I don't need my child is a useless piece of shit. They're not good for my yeah. content. I don't need them, right? They're not greater than, say, 30% yeah. of my yeah. content. You know, it's so obvious.
I would just say that, like, when we kind of go to, like, American conservative ways of thought, I think the biggest differentiator between a Tennessee, between how Tennessee is run, how California is run, how New York is run, how Florida is run, is the social safety net. And people in more rural areas and more even suburban areas do not believe in government intervention, do not believe in a social safety net, do not, like, they believe in rugged individualism.
Yes.
I have my land. I have my thing, my family, me, where the whatever, versus like other places in the country where it's like, I'm unemployed. I need unemployment insurance, food stamps, like community kitchen, phone, like all this shit, like community and like whatever. So I can see of like, well, why am I paying all this stuff? Where is all my tax dollars going?
Totally.
Where is all this stuff? Like, I'd rather as well move to Tennessee. God forbid your little teenage girl needs an abortion.
Yeah.
God
yeah.
forbid something happens and they ban every social media platform. How are you going to make money? Are you going to have homeowners insurance? How long can you last in your house before they can take it away from you or yeah. evict you?
If Tennessee had a natural disaster, how well would they be able to respond? Like, yeah. would they respond significantly better than California has been able to? I mean,
the perspective shift is like rugged individualism. Like, that's what these people are fleeing to these states for.
Yeah.
So, okay, Sherry LeBrant, who is the mother of Cole LeBrant, whose video we watched, told Rolling Stone that the theory that they're moving to California because of this law is totally baseless. Cole and Savannah moved for several reasons, she said. Tennessee aligns more with their conservative values
sure.
compared to California. She also stated that Tennessee doesn't have state income tax. So again, that's great until your road is full of potholes.
Well,
and yeah. I've got a sister in Texas, and sometimes you're driving on a road that is janked up
yeah.
and it fucks your car up and
yeah.
there's no money to fix it. Like, sometimes there's randomly a freeze in Texas and everything shuts the fuck down
because yeah.
there's no reservoir of tax money to fix anything.
Yeah.
So people don't take into account the give and take. Now, I will say, internet culture writer Taylor Lorenz, put a pin in Taylor Lorenz's discourse.
We can't
get into the whole deep dive of Taylor Lorenz, but
yes.
she is a journalist who covers this shit specifically, and it is her beat, and almost kind of, she almost originated the beat in a certain way.
Yeah.
You know what I have to say? I have to disclose that she has blocked me.
She's also blocked me.
Yeah, well, and that's all you need to know. That's all you need to know.
Two-thirds of the people sitting here have been blocked by Taylor Lorenz. I have never tweeted at Taylor Lorenz, so I remain unblocked.
I don't remember doing anything to her, let me say. Did you do something?
I did not. But I tweeted in support of someone who was against
me. I see. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Anyway, guys, Taylor Lorenz deep dive coming
Come
soon.
On,
we'll
yes.
do it in
at
a
least we'll have to do all the research because we
yeah,
can't access the
see.
Posts.
Well, she hasn't blocked Go Touch Grass, so we could probably hear from Go Touch Grass.
There
but anyway, she is a journalist who covers this type of stuff.
Yes,
she
correct.
Has. She is researches into this. And on her blog, User Mag, she said that she does not believe this trend is because of the California law. So here's what she wrote. There is absolutely no widespread trend of creators moving out of California in the wake of the law. And every industry expert I polled on the issue said the opposite was happening. California remains a thriving hub for influencers of all types, including family influencers, and already has some of the strongest labor practices for children. Additionally, the law is not likely even enforceable on many family creators' businesses, given the way their revenue streams are constructed. What the viral conspiracy theory about family influencers fleeing California completely ignores is how Tennessee has exploded in popularity among influencers over the past few years and become known as the conservative Hollywood. I did not really know this, but a few right-leaning family influencers are a drop in the bucket compared to the much larger right-wing influencer exodus from California to Tennessee that has happened over the past few years. Conservative influencer network and media company Daily Wire relocated from Los Angeles to Nashville in 2020, along with their roster of conservative talent, right-wing influencers Robbie Starbuck and Tomi Lahren, along with several other creators, also fled Los Angeles to Tennessee. Conservative family influencers in other states that have zero child influencer laws on the books are also going to Tennessee, further refuting the idea this is a California-specific phenomenon. She also notes that the influencer industry in California is growing, not declining. But to me, I'm like, okay, but is that total influencers or family influencers specifically?
I think you hit the nail on the head of, like, total influencers. It's the same thing where people are like, we're going to leave New York. It's like, New York will always have artists and whatever. But, like, yeah, this niche is, and which makes sense. Like, and what I've seen, too, is, like, now a lot of Tennessee conservatives are fighting because they don't like the transplants in their thing. So it's like an interesting gentrification.
They're gentrified by richer white people. Yeah, exactly.
It is very funny to have like all the various Kayleys fighting each other and be like, I'm named Kaylee AIH and that's different. I think, I guess when I read that, I was like, I mean, that is certainly interesting, but I do feel like it's kind of a both. Type of thing where it's like, I mean, okay, now California is also going to do this law. We probably, if they're already a conservative leaning family vlog family, I believe that a lot of them probably were already considering a move. And then you see this law come down and it's like, okay, yeah, no, we're doing the move.
Can I just say,
yeah,
are you criticizing Taylor Lorenz reporting style for not being nuanced enough and not seeing the full picture?
I'm not
and
only focusing
on one thing, because that is interesting. And I will leave it right there.
And wouldn't something interesting happen if you put that into some sort of a post that she was capable of seeing?
And then,
perhaps.
And then we can't do the Taylor Lorenz deep dive because we can't see her post.
That's true. We're on
but
the
I'm
other
saying
side.
Yeah. That is a criticism that many have about 100%. Her reporting style, is that to be incendiary, she will knock down something when it really is both and. Yeah. But anyway.
Yes.
But anyway.
Chandler.
Let's get our final thoughts on the potential that family vloggers are mass exiting to Nashville because of California trying to protect kids.
Well, I'm thinking that, you know, perhaps this is a good explanation for why Tennessee above other states. But the video, the whole time they're talking about, all we knew is that we had to get out of California.
Yeah.
We were looking at Florida. We were looking at Tennessee. But like, that was what they emphasized, is that they were like, we want to get out of here. And again, like, California being too expensive does not cut it as an explanation when you're making that much money.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the quality of life is going to be high. So I buy they wanted to go to a conservative state, and that might be part of it. And I buy that once they decided to leave, they would go where everybody else is going. But come on, they are family bloggers. They're leaving at this exact time. And again, the doth protest too much of having the child there, as they explain the choice, is bizarre. And so, yeah, I totally buy. Look, I'm sure they are not one-dimensional human beings. I'm sure they have multiple reasons for why they're doing it. But why now? I think that could have been the tipping point for sure.
Yeah, like it's an accelerator of the decision-making process, perhaps.
Yeah, and I'm just going to say, yeah, like obviously not everyone in Tennessee is conservative, blah, blah, blah. Caveat, caveat, caveat.
Yes.
But it is interesting. The timing is interesting. It's interesting to think of like these whole havens and like, yeah, like what is kind of the purpose? It's like, yeah, if you want to just be in like an isolated little hole with having your own property and having your own family and not really like interact with the world, then maybe Tennessee is going to be better for you outside of whatever. But I'm just like, it's just sad that you like had to relocate your whole business for this or that or whatever.
Yeah.
And, this ties perfectly into Grasshole is all I'm going
to
say.
Okay, we will get to Grasshole. But first, I do want to declare a Grass hero.
Oh. Yes.
So Chandler, we told you before we started, Grasshole of the Week is our segment where we name the person who needs to log off the most. A Grass hero is someone who is posting perfectly.
Yes, yes.
They're doing a fantastic job with their online persona, mm-hmm. and we must doff our caps to them.
Okay, yes. Great.
This lines up with our other segment, Polititiktok, where we talk about politics, because this week's Grass hero is Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Y'all, okay, yeah. Listen. You guys may have heard about the heated meeting between Trump, Zelensky, and J.D. Vance last week. If you want a full breakdown of that and all the implications, I would point you to literally any political podcast any putting political out episodes podcast. This week.
Sure. Yeah.
You will get it.
I think this is going to be better than Up First. I think this is going to be better than every
our
political,
thing. Yeah. You could pay us some extra money. We'll do it. Yeah. It's tough work.
Yes. Are we zeroing in on the political implications right now? Not really.
No.
Are we zeroing in on the global implications right now?
Certainly not
really. But what I do want to zero in on is that Zelensky's been posting really good.
Yeah. That he's a good poster.
That he's a yes. good fucking poster.
Trump is a good poster, but he ain't the only one.
It's true.
And that's
and he was threatened by that in the room. He knew there was a true poster in the room.
You could
real,
tell.
Real posters are so scared. He's scared of AOC. That's why you never see Trump with AOC. He knows that. And Elon, he wishes.
Yes.
He wishes.
Yes. Yes.
Real true posters. No, and remember that Zelensky, his background is that he was basically Ukrainian Jon Stewart. He's a comedian, so he has a comedy background.
Yeah.
He has
Very
the
quick.
Mind for humor.
Yeah.
Yes.
So one of the big elements of this dust-up is when J.D. Vance got all pissed off and accused Zelensky of not saying thank you for all of the aid that we've sent to Ukraine, even though he has, like, demonstrably said thank you many times.
Yes, yes.
And also, what are you... You never said thank you to my dad.
Yeah.
Mr. Trump is here. You didn't say thank you.
Just the worst person with last extensions I've ever seen.
Just like, the worst. Ugh. And then getting mad at him for not wearing a suit. And I'm like, you guys are just mad because he looks really good in the fatigues. They're always mad because these guys look good in the fatigues.
When has Elon ever worn a suit? Like that motherfucker.
Right?
And his shirts are, it's actually offensive. When someone is that rich and dresses that bad.
Yes.
We were actually just talking about this on the Patreon, that at one of his, like, official Doge events, the one where he had, like, the fucking chainsaw on set, Elon was wearing a shirt that said, like, I'm not distracted. I'm doing side quests. So, like, don't fucking talk to me about wearing
almost,
a nice suit
that
looks fucking good.
Sarcasm loading.
Yes.
Dot. Yeah.
Literally.
And, like, my dog is, like, 55, dressed like a fucking Hot Topic.
I know. I like absolutely.
I was so okay. I've been telling Elise, I've been saying, I went to the suburbs this weekend. I went to a big ass mom. We did like a little bachelorette thing. So we had to go to the one place that had bachelorette party games, Spencer's.
Of course.
It was overstimulating, overwhelming, a lot. We walk out, we take a beat, and my best friend turns to me. She was like, there's a lot of shirts about autism in there.
And Elon Musk has all of them.
And he wears them on repeat. Collection.
Yeah, you know, he has like the Doug closet that's just like the same like fucking meme t-shirts over and over and over again. But anyway, guys, go to the Patreon if you want to hear about Elon Musk. I can't.
Elon Musk, if you want me and Elise to reenact Elon Musk's sex.
Yeah, his disgusting sex. Oh, God. Okay. He's a Grasshole Hall of Fame. We're talking about grass hero Volodymyr Zelensky, right? So, okay, following the dispute, White House officials asked the Ukrainian delegation to leave, booted him out. There was supposed to be a joint press conference. That got canceled. But after his departure, Zelensky gets on Twitter, and this is where he like really starts to show off his comedy background. So we can pull up the tweets. So first one, I think just a classic regular tweet. He's saying, thank you, America. Thank you for your support. Thank you for the visit. Thank you at POTUS, Congress, and the American people. Ukraine needs just and lasting peace, and we are working for exactly that. So obviously he's hitting the thank yous very hard,
yes.
But this could just be a regular whatever.
Right.
But if you go to this next tweet, then he starts responding to every single world leader who tweets something nice about Ukraine and saying, thank you for your support. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your support. We've got it for the prime minister of Slovenia. That's Melania's hometown.
Wow. Literally your move, Slovenia.
Someone,
style.
Bart DeWeaver. I don't know where he's from. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your support to every politician who is tweets at him. We've got one from Justin Trudeau. Yeah, Russia illegally and unjustifiably invaded Ukraine. Thank you for your support. So he just, his entire feed right now is him retweeting political leaders. And
Bosnia
saying,
and Herzegovina and Vanuatu and every nation on earth.
And I just think that is so funny for him to do.
That is your level of petty.
That is my level of petty. I do love to see it. I don't think it's going to help him with the situation, but at least go down cracking those jokes, my man. Yeah.
Well, a friend of mine posted a take recently that was basically arguing that, like, Zelensky clocked that, like, things are pretty much done in terms of U.S. support. Like, that's collapsing. Trump advance are not going to be reliable partners. But what he needed to do was, like, showcase strength for, like, to redouble his European support.
Yeah.
To get everybody over there to recognize, like, okay, like, if, you know, it's in their, especially because it's in such their best interest for Russia not to continue to encroach and so on and so forth. So it was basically, like, his way of, like, you know, that sort of standing up to that public humiliation, like, made him look strong and, like, resolved into all of these other leaders who are not aligned with Trump and will now redouble their support for you.
And they met with NATO, met everybody except for the U.S. met.
Yeah.
I mean, we cannot get into the political.
Guys, there are so many podcasts that are going to do that for you. This is just about Zelensky's tweets, which are funny.
Yes, yes.
The tweets are funny.
My final question before we move to Grass Hole of the Week is, should I tweet at Zelensky from the Go Touch Grass account? I could not find him on Blue Sky.
Okay.
But should I tweet support to him and see if he'll retweet?
And I'll say this.
You got to get a thank you for your support.
For Grass Nation.
Let me tell you, Grass Nation, let me tell you, somebody commented on our YouTube. I sent this to Elise. They were like, she keeps saying three words and pausing over and over again, and it's distracting. Like, so we didn't know if it was me or Elise, but basically pointing out that, like, we stop, we start to say something, we think about it, and then keep saying it.
Right.
First of all, fuck you. Of course, we think about it. Second of all, whatever. Third of all, what did I write? Thank you for watching. Thank you for watching.
Yeah, and that's a Zelensky presidential leadership attitude. Okay, so I will tweet support for the people of Ukraine from the people of Grass Nation and see if we can get Zelensky to retweet.
You're the leader of Grass Nation. Yeah. Listen, people are looking for a new leader, and it could be us.
Here's someone who's not going to be our new leader.
This Grass Hole of the Week. This is our final segment of the show where we pick one unlucky person and tell them that they need to log off.
Yeah.
They need to go touch grass. They need to connect with other people, with humans, with nature. And I'm going to say that this is one person, but also a group of people. And this is so related to what we were talking about with the family vloggers. Today on Go Touch Grass again, we've covered all kinds of mommy and parent influencers. And today's Grass Hole is a mommy and parent influencer, but she's a different kind of mommy and family vlogger. Today's Grass Hole of the Week is Kylie Perkins. Do you know Kylie Perkins?
No.
She is a mommy blogger from North Carolina. And Kylie Perkins at Socially Kylie has 2.1 million TikTok followers and 73,000 Instagram followers.
Not bad.
She is a mommy blogger with a twist.
Oh.
So she doesn't show her kids in her things. So good.
Okay.
We don't see the kids.
Okay.
Yes.
But what she does, she focuses on cleaning and maintaining the home. And she has kind of like what some might say a motivational speaker kick to them.
I see.
Other might see her as like a drill sergeant.
Okay.
People say like tough love. Like if Bianca Xavier doing her makeup and telling you her like reasons for wanting to leave California is like your friend, this girl's like, you're really like tough love, like no nonsense ass kicker person. So her whole thing is like telling people to get it together and stop making excuses for everything.
Oh my God.
So let's just watch one of her videos.
Know how some of you moms actually can go to sleep at night knowing that your kids are sleeping like that. Knowing that your house is like that, knowing that your kids' beds have not been washed in God knows how long, knowing that you might have bugs in your house, knowing that your laundry is just sitting there, how do you go to sleep at night? And if you say, it's the depression. How do you not say, like, it's time to fight this depression? Because my kids are living like this. I seriously don't understand. And maybe it's because of the way that I was, like, I was not even raised the ways that I grew up, and just seeing my freaking victim mentality parents, my crybaby mom, my crybaby dad, my whole entire life, where they just couldn't get anything through their head. Maybe it was the effect that that had on me, where my life was so freaking hard growing up that I don't want it for my kids. And maybe some of you don't have that. Maybe some of you have been way too freaking coddled and that's your problem. But at what point are you going to be like, this is disgusting? This is not okay to live like this and to have my kids live like this. At what point is that going to snap for you? Because I seriously don't know how you guys are not just getting up and doing laundry and cleaning your house. It's not hard. You are blessed with a home. You're blessed with children. A lot of people can't even have children, and you're not even cleaning up after yours. How are you not going to make the changes necessary?
Flags are falling on the ground.
How are you not going to push past? How are you not going to choose to fight? How do you sleep and live in a house like that? You're going to get this horrible cycle. And I understand the deeper you're in, the harder it is to get out. But at what point are we going to change? At what point are you going to decide that you don't want your kid to be embarrassed by the house that they're living in? To have the trauma of having a lazy mom. At what point are we going to change?
All right. So tell me what we just saw there and tell me your thoughts.
A very angry woman doing her laundry. Pissed off doing laundry.
I guess my first question is because I don't actually get the sense that the audience is depressed moms who need help. The audience is other people who think they're better than the depressed moms who need help. And they're like, yes, go off. Fuck all these other moms who need help.
I think that it's actually a mix.
Really?
There are people who are like, wow, I just got up and like changed my day. This one is more of a direct to camera, but a lot of her things like, here's a good afternoon routine to touch up your thing. Or like, right, before a restaurant closes for the day, it breaks down, it cleans up. You guys need to have that with your thing. Like,
oh my
before
God.
You go to bed, you need to wash every dish, blah, blah, blah. It's a lot of like, get your routine, but also with that tone.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because this would not work on me, right? That I'm like, I don't need you to be mean to me. Just tell me what you need me to do and yeah, I'll do it. It's like, but I, you know, maybe some people are motivated that way, but I was just like, it was really wild for her to be like, at what point do you fight the depression?
Yeah,
had that not occurred to these women? I guess it was funny. The first time they thought of it.
That was so funny. And it was also really funny when she just went on that like kind of long tangent about how her own parents are lazy.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know what her situation is. Maybe she grew up in a really like bad.
I think it was like, right, like some substance abuse, but also
okay,
like,
look, different.
But that's not having a lazy mom.
Yeah,
like she called the trauma of having a lazy mom is very different from having truly neglectful parents. And I feel like she's gone so far in the other direction where it's like, if you leave some clothes lying around the living room, you're traumatizing your children.
Yeah, yeah. Or like if you do the dishes in the morning or don't do yeah, laundry every day. I guess that's what I kind of want to understand more from her is like, what is the line that she is actually angry and talking about? Because yeah, we did a Patreon episode about Nurse Hannah.
Exactly. It's
which
the opposite
was
of this.
Kind of the opposite, where this woman had like 12 dirty diapers. 17 dirty diapers strewn about her house. And right, people were like, that's not cool. And then other people were like, you have to give moms a break. And I'm like, yeah, you yeah, can't have poop in the house. Like, that, like it, yeah, that's poop in the house.
That's a fundamental.
That's a line for me is poop
yes,
in the house.
Yes.
But not in the toilet. In the right, house and out and about right, and on right, the right, tables and all that stuff.
And you're a fascist for this opinion.
And I'm bad. But so I guess I'm like, yeah, if we're talking about true filth where you're really not taking care of your home and it's actually like a biohazard for your kids, that is different. But if we're talking about that maybe both parents work and there are kind of toys around and not all the dishes are always done and not all the laundry is always done, that to me, I don't think needs this level of wake up, mom, and deal with your depression.
Yeah.
There's so many aspects to this universe, right? Mm-hmm. We've covered like the people who have 6 kids living in a 1-bedroom apartment. It's kind of like TLC reality TV, like trauma porn. And then you have people who are like, motherhood is so hard. I'm so overwhelmed. Look at how filthy my mess is. I'm going to show the world. And then you have these people who are like, there is absolutely no fucking excuse. Why? And all of a sudden it's like interesting, all the things.
Yeah.
But listen, being mean and yelling, a grasshole does not make. Can you guess where this is going?
Oh, man.
Anywhere, anything. Just take a wild guess.
Oh.
It's not that big a twist. What's the most obvious cancelization for this type of woman?
Getting rowdy in the comments. Mm-hmm. Getting rowdy in the comments. Coming for somebody who actually has mental illness. Yeah.
Well, it's so funny.
Are they breaking up slurs?
I mean, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But today, The Cut released an article titled "The Influencer Yelling at Moms to Try Harder." And it is by Lindsay Gelman. Check it out on The Cut. It's a really great piece. Basically, I'm really surprised you guys didn't guess this.
No.
An influencer made a video alluding to Perkins saying, basically, this girl has 2 million followers, but only follows, like, not that many people. And one of those people is our president, Donald Trump.
Of course.
And people were like, that's fucked up. And conservatives were angry. And they quickly rallied around Perkins, following her in droves and flooding her comment section with support. Someone said, following you because of the way the left is trying to cancel you.
Oh, my God.
And then we have this video from someone who, I mean, I'm just not going to say anything. We have to see this person.
Okay.
Saturday, February 22nd here on Capitol Hill, and a relatively slow news day. Nonetheless, a gorgeous day on the Hill. With that being said, I'm going to ask all of you for a huge favor. If you are not up to speed on the drama surrounding TikTok creator Kylie Perkins, allow me to fill you in. So Kylie Perkins is an incredible creator. She creates content that is both motivational and effective, and over 1 million individuals follow her and desire her content. However, the left came for her. A creator with just 30,000 followers posted a video yesterday that's now gone viral attacking Kylie because Kylie followed President Trump. Well, with over 1.3 million views, and people are essentially coming after Kylie. Now, in typical Kylie nature, and once you watch her content, you'll understand it doesn't seem to be phasing her. But us conservatives must show up. Gone be the days where the radical left feels like they have the power to dismantle someone's career, as this is Kylie's career, all because of what their political beliefs are. You would think by now the liberals would understand that there are way more of us than there are of them, but they don't. So I'm going to tag Kylie here. If you will, please go follow her, engage with her content, and I promise you'll thoroughly enjoy it. But there's more. There's also Tori Williams. Tori Williams posted a video today in which she openly expressed her support for President Trump.
We don't need to know.
We can't get into Tori Williams. So
when he said he's going to fill you in, I'm like, yes, he is. He's going to fill us in. He's going to Botox us in.
Yeah.
He's going to do all kinds of filling in.
What I was going to say is, like, I don't know how someone this yassified can be so supportive of an anti-LGBTQ movement in Trump. It's like, you can't also be talking about, like, for those of you who aren't filled in on the drama, and then be like this right wing person. It just,
I mean, that's
so
half
funny.
Of TikTok.
I know, but it's crazy how, like, the gays won the cultural war in a way, because they're, you know, everybody's looking like they're a liberal in 2013.
I feel like it's also like that girl who does the Republican makeup stuff, Susanna Lambert. I feel like she should do a version that's like Republican men's filler, because it's a very specific tone set by Matt Gaetz, where like the cheeks are done wrong and it creates a squinty eye and a very pointy nose tip that is happening. Put a pin in that. Susanna Lambert, get on it. One thing that is just it. And we've said this a million times, but it's so funny to me to be like, the left has canceled her. The only followers she is losing are people who don't want to follow someone that follows Donald Trump.
Yeah.
That's it. anyone who doesn't care about that doesn't care about it and will continue following her. And if, as he says, which isn't true, there's more of them than there are of us, whatever, she should be fine. She's just losing people who don't want to follow her, given the new information.
Yeah.
That is allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also just like, I think, unfortunately, everything is political, everything, whatever. But I'm also like, you have to fucking get real. The results of this election, whatever, what have we come to find? That most women in this country, especially women under 30, are leaning more Democrat.
Yes.
They're leaning more left. That is the reality. If your target audience is young mothers, then you have to keep that in mind.
Yes.
You have to, like, these people, like, and there's consequences. You can like Donald Trump, but you are going to lose a big or significant portion of your audience. If you want young mothers who voted for Trump, you will have an audience.
Yeah.
It'll just be different or smaller than the initial people.
Yeah.
But what I was asking, which, well, there's a lot of things, right? Like, what I was asking, like, what do you think the controversy was?
Yeah.
Is because a lot of people have been calling out that this woman, like, that whole, like, get up and clean your fucking house.
Yeah.
Is just reminiscent of a lot of conservative ways of thinking of, like, pull yourself up by the bootstraps.
Yes.
There's no excuses. There's no this. When, like, a lot of, so much of, like, this thing and, like, the ability to maintain your home is, you know, due to, like, so many systemic factors. How much disposable income?
Yes.
How's your house? What kind of housing do you have? Can you work outside the home? What is all of that? And, like, that is not being addressed by this kind of thing.
Yes.
There is something also, like, some other creators have been saying, like, there are a lot of, like, Black women and Hispanic women that have been, like, showing that you don't have to be high income to have a clean house.
Yes.
And, like, that is kind of the standard of living for other races and stuff. And, like, why do you need this one creator to tell you there are other people that are doing this? That's an argument. And another argument is, like, that this is reminiscent to that wellness, health, homemaker pipeline to conservatism, like, similar to Rachel Hollis, like, girl, wash your fucking face bullshit.
Yeah.
And, like, you have the same 24 hours as Beyonce, whatever.
Wasn't that a Jordan Peterson thing, too,
yeah,
that he's like, make your bed every day, da-da-da. And it's like, the thing is, it's not technically bad advice. Yeah,
yeah,
wash your face. Yeah, make your bed. Yeah, endeavor to have a clean home.
Yeah.
But I think we've been talking so much about, like, dog whistles in,
yes,
these videos.
100%.
And I think that tone, no excuses, there's no reason, blah, 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 this, like, angry kind of black and white.
Yes.
There's, figure out your depression,
right,
and do the laundry.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And because, like, I think that there is something like the implication when you say you are capable of doing this is that if someone isn't doing it, then they are just lazy or there's something inherently wrong with them that they are not doing that. And, you know, I think that that tone, that's part of the reason why I didn't guess the Trump thing was because I think part of me just assumed, like, she was already in, like, conservative influencer world and they canceled her for something else, because I just immediately associate that kind of, like, moralistic, like, you need to do that with conservatism. But of course, they don't have a monopoly on, like, motivational speaking or, you know, that kind of thing. But I think increasingly, like, there is, like, same thing with, like, sort of like CEO mindset.
Yeah.
Of like, I wake up at 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
I have 3 work days, you know, my 5 to 9, my 9 to 5, and then my other 5 to 9. And it's like all of that used to be not apolitical because, of course, everything's political, but it was like something that was shared in a lot of different areas. And I do think there's this polarization that's happening where more and more, like, it's associated with, like, a right wing thing.
So I'm just going to read a little segment from this article from The Cut. Says, so 2 things, and then I'll make a final point. Quote, not to mention that Perkins' drill, sergeant, stick tends to sweep under the rug the issues that I would be more curious to hear her talk about. Her household division of labor, ideas for women who work outside the home. She will occasionally shout out strong single moms or give her husband kudos for helping out around the house. She has also acknowledged that her videos, some of which feature afternoon cleaning, aren't aimed at women who aren't coming home during the day. And if you're physically ill, disabled, seriously mentally ill, or pregnant, well, she doesn't mean you. Other than all that, though, Perkins wants women to understand that taking care of themselves and their family isn't actually hard. They're just making it hard. But with more eyes on her, it may be increasingly difficult to tout a message of individual agency as all but universal when there are so many caveats. Yeah. And that gets to this other thing, too, is like, there's no way to make this like universal if you have the attitude. And then also what other people have said, which goes kind of to your point of like, because I remember this has been on my mind for a while and I didn't know if I wanted to do a Patreon or like make her grass hole because I've seen it. And like the first time I saw it, it was like, yeah, I should have like a daily routine or a nightly routine to like whatever. But then the video just became so much more yelly.
Yes.
And that's what like a lot of like people who have studied this kind of content and what the article says is just like, this will help you. This is not sustainable for like a long term, like reshift, which is like what so much of diet culture or whatever. It's like, these are good and a shock to the system once or twice. But like, if you actually want to find a thing that like kicks you out of your depression, it's not going to be some white girl yelling at you.
Yeah. I mean, I'll pin the fuck out of a like, this is a daily, weekly, monthly cleaning schedule that works. I'm not opposed to content around like helping people keep a cleaner house, but it is the shaming tone and the fact that like it is directed at moms and it is directed at women when like the dad could clean the house. Like it's not even just a general like, you, human, should keep your house clean. It's like, moms, you're failing if you didn't do the laundry. And that's where it loses me.
And you're going to embarrass your kids. You're going to embarrass your husband, whatever, this and that, when it's like, it's just like, it's just stupid. It's fucked up. Whatever. People can choose to engage with the content, but also getting mad at people. The movement of people that are like, we have to protect our girl. They can't take away her livelihood. These are the same people, not even a month ago, were saying, we want the TikTok app to get banned. Fuck, get a real job, you fucking losers.
Right?
You get a real job, you fucking losers, too. How dare you try to cancel a conservative, whatever.
Yeah.
So for the crime of making mom-shaming fucking content, for the crime of trying, for the crime of those fillers, HP fillers, for the crime of trying to uncancel someone, I'm going to say everyone, Kylie Perkins and fans, go touch grass.
And that's our episode.
That's our episode.
Wow. What a beautiful range of topics.
About family values.
About family values. This is the family values episode.
Yeah. But also, like, how American conservatism is ruining this country in multiple ways.
Yep. And on that note, Chandler, where can everyone find you, follow you, watch your show? Remind us all.
You can watch my show about dismantling institutions. Abolish Everything on Nebula, nebula.tv/abolish. And I am at Chandler J. Dean on all platforms. And thank you guys so much for having me.
Of course. You can find this podcast at Go Touch Grass Pod on everything. I will tweet our support to President Zelensky from Grass Nation. And you can follow me at Pandalise on Instagram and at Elise Navidad on TikTok.
You can follow me at Millie_Tamaris on Instagram and TikTok and at Millie Tamaris on Twitter and everything else.
Wonderful. And until next time, go touch grass.
That was a HeadGum podcast.